us trampling on the stones. It's us down, down to the bone. Blood is thick, waters were known well, cousins were kept apart, mothers were often memories. Fathers were not favored on the farm, for he could do some harm, he could wreck the master scheme, for he, brothers, could dream. Your mama ain't no saint, your daddy died in a shallow stream, but your uncle Dr. King did have a dream, my brother. And what is your real excuse? Why can't you study your lessons and stay in school? Why can't you study your lessons and stay in school? Free love and sex ain't nothing but a game. Don't never last, try hope. Take a chance on love, register to vote. Money ain't everything, but you could buy her a ring. Listen to little blackbird sing.
Homeboy by Sunchi Ali. Welcome to the Qumran Report. May the peace and blessings of the life-giving creative spirit be upon you and upon your family. My name is Melvin Ishmael Johnson, coming at you live from Skid Row Studios. And I'm in the studio with my co-host, Earlene Anthony. Our call-in number is 1-800-893-9562. This week on the Qumran Report, we will talk about the Veterans Advocacy Connection with Teresa Thompson and Irene Cruz, who will be calling in a little later, with special guest Felicia Depew. Welcome to the Qumran Report. Yeah, welcome to the Qumran Report.
All right, all right.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah.
Before I turn it over to the for you to get an in-depth discussion about the Veterans Advocates Connection, I just want to start off with just asking you a question to talk about what is the major needs of veterans in general and female veterans in particular in the downtown and Skid Row area?
The biggest need I found, Melvin, has been housing. And it seems like just this past week, there were five veterans that I was able to get into transitional housing. And they're coming from different states. They're coming from different places, you know, and they're winding up downtown. And housing is the first thing. Because once we get you in housing, then the next thing is, okay, we got to get you settled, got to get you, you know, rooted somewhere for a minute. And then it's time to look for employment. And that's the next big thing is employment, finding employment. But, you know, there are a lot of jobs out there. There's training that's offered, and we'll talk about that a little later when I talk with our guests. But the opportunities are there. It's just that they have to be willing to go out there and get it and do it. And some of them are. They're taking advantage of being able to live in the transitional housing and use that time to get training, to go to school, to work part-time or either full-time. So those two issues right there are the biggest needs of our veterans, whether they're male or female. Mm-hmm. Now, where I'm at, I'm located in the downtown L.A. Central Library, so I don't get a lot of females. I get mainly males. But there are female veterans out there. I'm a female vet. And so as a result, you know, their needs are there, but they're not in the downtown area, which is probably good because it's not a good area that you want many of them to be in if they're in that homeless situation. So the needs are there, you know, and the VA has been working to address a lot of those needs, but there's still a lot of gaps, mm-hmm. you know, that are not being filled when we have married veterans. They don't have housing where they can be in the same place together. If they don't have children, they can find housing. But the VA forgot there are single vets and older vets who have just their wives or that don't have any small children that they're taking care of. It's just the two of them. And that has been one of the biggest problems also is finding a place where they can still be together. You know, they can be in a shelter, but if they are and they're together, he's on one side, she's on the other side, or he's on one floor and she's on another floor. Mm-hmm. He's in one program and she's in another program. Mm-hmm. So they haven't addressed that, and that's something that needs to be addressed, is what do we do with married vets that do not have children, veterans who have, for reasons like losing a job and have eventually lost everything, finding themselves on Skid Row together, trying to make it. And there should be emphasis on keeping that couple together, not separating them. Mm-hmm. And that's an issue that it seems to be, I don't think it's being ignored. I think it's just not being realized that, wow, yes, we got veterans that don't have little children, don't have teenage children. Their children are grown. But for whatever reasons, they find themselves homeless. And so that's one of the issues that needs to be addressed.
Okay.
And so far, the VA hasn't addressed it. Mm-hmm. And none of the organizations, they haven't addressed that need yet.
Mm-hmm. And then I hope in your discussion with Felicia later on that you get a chance to talk about how to centralize all of the resources down there for veterans, you know, in one local. Maybe in your show we could figure it out, some kind of job board or something like that,
yeah,
where
that
all
would be
of
good.
The veterans can access this information.
Yeah, because they've tried to do that with the Bob Hope Patriotic Hall.
Mm-hmm.
It hasn't quite gotten there yet, but that's what they were looking at, a one-stop center for veterans to be able to go and get their needs met.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it still needs some work, you mm-hmm. know.
Mm-hmm.
But the radio show, I think, by bringing on guests like Felicia, who can tell us about different programs, she's from one organization, another organization can come. And I know there are ways to do it. Mm-hmm. We just have to find the ways. What is the most workable way that will be effective and efficient for getting the information out to veterans? And that's the main thing that we have to work on.
Okay. Let's do a little short community calendar, and then I'll turn it over to you.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Right. Here's Earlene Anthony with the community calendar.
This is the community calendar for upcoming events. Friday, April the 17th, 2015 at 6 p.m., the Los Angeles Poverty Department and Drama Stage Coon Run presents a stage reading of If the Shoe Fits, Voices from the Dungeons and Tombs of Solitary Confinement. The script is compiled by Melvin Ishmael Johnson and Andy Griggs. The location of this event is the Los Angeles Poverty Department Museum, located at 440 South Broadway on the second floor, downtown Los Angeles. This is a free event. All are welcome to attend. Light refreshments will be served, and after the reading, there will be a Q&A. This is disability and wheelchair accessible. For more information, please contact 213-479-1764 or 213-413-1077. Now, this event is on Tuesdays and Saturdays, beginning April the 25th, 2015, through May the 9th, 2015. It's going to be fun, and it's going to be free. And it's a 3 weeks comedy and performance workshop. And it'll be an intensive workshop, and it'll be held in the Skid Row area. And this is led by Christina Wong, guest artist Rich Yap, and Leslie Acetio. The location is the L.A. Can, 838 East 6th Street, Los Angeles, California, 921. And people in the area know where Los Angeles Can is. So please, for more information, contact Christina Sherrill. If you have a community event that you would like announced on our show, send the information to dramastage1@yahoo.com. Attention, Earlene Anthony. The call-in number for our show is 800-893-9562. Now, back to our host.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Earlene Anthony. Now, I know your co-host, Ms. Irene Cruz, she's supposed to call in at 8:30 tonight.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to turn it over to Teresa Thomas for Veterans Advocacy Connection.
Okay, thank you, Melvin. Well, tonight, Felicia DePute joins us to talk about the Weingart Center's core programs and why they're successful in helping people get off the street, including non-veterans. And but before we bring her on, I want to tell you a little bit about Felicia. I met her back in November? Was it November?
Maybe November, December.
Yeah, somewhere back in that of 2014 that I met her. And she's the Weingart Center's Marketing and Public Relations Coordinator. As an astute marketing and public relations strategist and writer, Felicia brings extensive professional management experience in the public and private sectors. She has been engaged in government, community, and media relations, corporate communications, as well as
philanthropic.
Philanthropic. You know what? That's one of those words. And cause-related marketing. Passionate about humanitarian causes and social human services, Felicia is laser-focused on telling the stories of the voiceless, those whose lives have been transformed and their self-sufficiency restored through participation in the many Weingart Center programs, as well as stories about the homeless and conditions on Skid Row. We can talk all night about that.
Oh, yes, we can.
In March of this year, Felicia was involved in the launch of a new Weingart Center social media campaign that has received international attention. The emotionally charged campaign, Don't Make a Donation, Make an Investment, can be viewed as investing in L.A., and it's designed to change the way homeless people are viewed. And so with that, on that note, Felicia, tell us more about the mission and the goals of the Weingart Center overall. Give the audience an overall view of it.
Well, first of all, I want to just say thank you for having me here this evening. I am excited. I've only been with the Weingart Center 6 months, and I know only seems like such a little word in a moment, but for six months I've been with the Weingart Center, and it's been a nice, interesting, eye-opening experience for me, and I want to continue to do work that helps the people who no one really listens to, no one really seems to put a lot of effort into caring about, except for what I see are the social service organizations that are down on Skid Row. I currently work at the Weingart Center, and our mission is to take those who are homeless and or at risk of being in a high poverty situation, which could lead to homelessness, to help them transform their lives to become productive, self-sufficient citizens. The only way you can change the way things are being done here in America is that you got to help those who need a hand up. Yeah. And so that's pretty much what the Weingart Center wants to do. That's our goal, is to provide that hand up that's not being currently provided to individuals who are living on the street.
And the Weingart Center has been around for how long?
31 years, to be exact. The Weingart Center started back in the late 80s or early 80s and is now operating independently of. It used to be under Volunteers of America who handled it before. Yeah, before the Weingart Center was actually incorporated and put in place. And once the Weingart Center was established, they took it over from them in like 1980.
Now, the programs, you have many interesting programs. I mean, for veterans, non-veterans. Discuss some of those programs you have for non-veterans, because, you know, we deal with veterans and their families. So it's important that they know that they can be helped too. You know, if it's a sister or brother or uncle or cousin or child, that they can be helped too at the Weingart. There's a lot of resources.
Absolutely. The Weingart Center has about 11 core programs. And then, of course, within those core programs, there are subsets to those programs. What we believe is that there is no one size or one fits all solution.
Right.
And so we don't try to force a round peg into a square hole. What we do is accept these individuals as they come in the door, determine what their needs are, and create a wraparound set of services to help them progress forward and get back up on their feet. Mm-hmm. The 11 core programs that we offer include a woman's renaissance program, which is strictly for women. Mm-hmm. Usually many of them that are coming through the door, domestic violence, may have lost their living situation due to relationship problems, maybe job loss. That program is specifically for women. The floor is dedicated to women. There are no men on that floor. It's an opportunity for women to work with women, to voice their concerns, and to get the kind of care that they need that's focused on them. We have a workforce program. That's the core portion of everything, or maybe I should say the foundational purpose of what the Weingart Center is really about, which is getting people trained and putting them in positions where they are able to go out and look for jobs. And we offer them all the support they need, from providing them with customer service training. We also offer them certifications that are including a guard card for security officers. That is a state certification, which once these individuals have this card, they can go out, get a job immediately working as a security guard. Mm-hmm. If they continue down the track, they can actually start their own security company. So we offer the guard card. We also offer a food service certification, which allows them to go and work in cafes and restaurants. One of the big things that we do at the Weingart Center is we make sure that every individual who comes through there has a resume that makes sense. We walk them through the process of what it takes to get a good job, what you need to do to get a good job. And one of the first things we do is take them through an extensive, intensive customer service program. Mm-hmm. Because the first thing you have to do is learn to listen.
Right.
And then you have to learn to respond accordingly. Mm-hmm. So we take them through a process of learning customer service. And from there, once we find out what their interests are, we work with them to get that resume put together. And then we tie them back to a second program we have under Workforce called GROW. Over there, we have a team of people who are working in the field and with local businesses to provide them with jobs. We go online, we search it out. The team looks at the fit. Mm-hmm. And they set up interviews with these individuals and the companies. So we provide them with a lot of resources to find employment.
Now, is the training required or is it optional? Is it something they can choose to do or is it required as a part of participation in one of the programs?
It's required. I mean, you have to have some mechanisms in place that make people make the decision to want to stand up and get on their feet. Mm-hmm. So it is a requirement for our programs that if you become a client within our programs, outside of the specific program you're in, having a job is the first step towards regaining your self-sufficiency. So yeah. It is a requirement.
Okay. You named guard card, food service. What else?
Well, the other ones are just, once they start down the path, we have a lot of people there who, I think surprisingly to a lot of the local residents, everybody who comes to the Weingart Center isn't someone who's, you know, just coming off of some kind of a substance abuse. Mm-hmm. We've got people who were graduates of Berkeley University mm-hmm. who fell on hard times. And mm-hmm. so these are individuals that had a career going and had some kind of a tragic or traumatic event happen in their life. Maybe it was a bad decision, but they're willing to get back up on their feet. And so we, again, work around that. But the two base programs we have are the guard card and the food service. And then, of course, working with local businesses, it expands to almost everything that's possible out there.
Well, you know, and that's really good because you're some of the shelters I know, some, they, because of the way they have to, the people have to come, they really can't pull themselves back up. Because they have to leave all day, and they leave them, make them leave at 6 o'clock in the morning, and they're gone all day. They can't come back until 4, 5, 6 o'clock in the evening, and you can't have a life. You can't go to school. You can't get the training. It's very difficult. I mean, I shouldn't say it can't be done. It can be done, but it's very difficult because you're not stable. You're not getting the rest. I had a veteran that was staying in such a place, and he wasn't getting sleep. It was in a dormitory setting, and he was tired each day. They were going through sleep deprivation because wow. of the situation he was in. And so that's something that the Weingart that I know gives them that opportunity. You have a room. You may have some roommates, but you have a chance to just relax, get back on your feet, pick yourself up, and keep on going. And a lot of these other programs don't provide that. They don't give them a chance to get art either. They don't require anything. There's no incentive or motivation to get up and do something. There are programs, I'm just amazed. How can they let people just stay in bed all day or just sit around all day looking at TV? And there's no requirement for them to do anything. And they just you know, they can stay in a place for 2 years, 3 years, 4 years. Believe me, I can tell some names and places of people, of organizations that are allowing people to just waste away instead of requiring them to get up off their butts, to get out those beds and get busy doing something, requiring something. They don't require anything, so they sit all day. They do absolutely nothing. So that's one of the things I like about the Wine Guard. If they come in there, they got to do something.
That's right. I'm a firm believer that a mindset change is the first thing that must happen in order for somebody to move from this current position that they're in.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems to be the same kind of philosophy that is played out at the Wine Guard, because you come in the door, you become a client, you determine that you want to become a client,
mm-hmm.
and becoming a client, there are some responsibilities that you'll have. It's about helping you learn how to restructure and organize your life so that you can begin to move toward being self-sufficient. So the requirements that WineGuard has is, hey, you're in our program. We give you a place to lay your head every night. You got your own room, or you're like you're saying, you may have a roommate or two, but you have your own room. We feed you 3 meals a day. We don't charge you a dime for it.
Right.
You can come and go as you please as it relates to you not feeling as if you're locked in.
Right.
But you have responsibilities. Part of what all of these programs have are these wraparound services that include, if you're coming in the door and you've been struggling with substances, you have some kind of an addiction, we have a whole clinical program that covers
right.
substance abuse
yeah.
and behavioral health issues. So, you know, we want to get you in. We want to get you through counseling. We want to find out what are your triggers. We want to find out how we can help you, how we can move you through that process, and to help you graduate and leave that portion of your life behind. So it's part of your being a client or a participant in the WineGuard program, and certainly workforce is, because, again, self-sufficiency not only starts with a mindset change, it starts with you having the ability to have a job, to retain that job, and to make a living so that you can be on your own.
So what are some of the other programs besides the Renaissance for women?
We also have two programs that are kind of hand-in-hand almost. Our EPIC and our AB-109 programs are for those who are coming out of the penal system.
Mm-hmm.
It's very difficult for them to be reintegrated back into the community. That's a really tough situation. A lot of people don't want these individuals to just come back into the neighborhoods. And so what we do is we work with them to make that slow transition from a life of being behind bars or in prison to helping them regain skills that they need. One of the things we recently had happen at the Weingart Center is through our EPIC program, the participants in the program actually wrote poetry.
Okay.
And their book is sitting in the library, actually where you work now, down at Central Library. It's been published. The book is called Pathways.
Pathways.
And yes, it was a book that was put together by three young ladies who work with the AB-109 and EPIC programs.
Okay.
And they came in and they taught them how to, you know, kind of put their writings together to make it make sense. And a lot of the stuff is published, and it's really people talking about where they the things they've come through in life, you know, the struggles they may have had and how they've kind of victoriously come through that. And so it's a very inspiring little book, but yeah, they're published.
That's good. That's great. You know, that's the kind of news that we need to be hearing, is that the potential that's inside, because God has given us all talents.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, we all have talents. We have skills that God has placed in us. And many times we need the right situation to bring those talents and skills out.
Absolutely.
And so being in the AB-109, they're coming out of jail. They need that. They need that support. And that gives them a chance to voice that inner person that's struggling and dealing with the pain and hurt of everything that they've gone through.
Right.
So to be able to write it down and then to get it published, that's great.
Yes.
You know, that's the kind of stories we want to hear more about from any program, is that people are using their talents, that their God-given talents that they have within them, and not letting it go to waste.
Absolutely.
You know, but using it. So Pathways. Yeah. All right, audience, look up that book, Pathways.
Yeah.
I'm at the LA Central Library, Veterans Resource Corps, and we're talking with Felicia DePew.
That's correct.
Okay, I'm saying it right. So I want you to go to the library and come by and see me, but pick up the book, Pathways. It's a book of poetry by some of the participants in the Weingart program. Yes. Okay, and there was another program that you was talking about?
Epic is another program that deals with those who are coming out of the penal system, maybe not at the higher risk level.
Okay.
But a lot of the individuals that are released right out of the jail system don't have anywhere to go. And so they usually end up in shelters.
Okay.
And if you have been struggling with substance abuse or something that got you into that situation in the first place, the last thing you want them to do is to be walking the streets of Skid Row.
Right.
There's too many opportunities for them to find themselves in that same predicament and end up back where they just were released from. Mm-hmm. So the EPIC program is for a much lower risk inmate who's done their time and is now being released to be integrated back into the community. And again, it's a step-by-step program because a lot of things have to be worked out. You serve time. You learn how to live a certain way when you're behind bars. And that's not the way free society lives. And so it's very difficult for them to make that transition up on their own. So we have this program called EPIC that, again, walks them through the process of determining what was it that brought you to this point that landed you behind bars that you had to serve time. And a lot of it is, it's usually family stuff, you know, a father figure not being there, you getting caught up in, you know, just little things that mushroomed into something bigger and ultimately landed you behind bars. And so we want to work through that. Anger management is a huge part of what we see happening to those who are coming out of the penal system. And so, again, we have our case managers and our counselors who work with them to learn how to deal with that anger. And then, of course, we have all of, again, our substance abuse programs. We make sure they understand about getting jobs. And one of the parts of the program that they utilize a lot is they spend a lot of time in the library. We teach them how to go to the library, how to use the resources in the library so that they can look for other means of work. And or if they're, a lot of them are very talented writers, singers, dancers, all kinds of, I mean, just different talents and gifts. And we want to hone those gifts for them and help them hone those gifts. And so we have our counselors who spend a lot of time with them.
Well, along with all those programs, you know, we're about veterans, the Veterans Resource Corps, which is the group I am a member of, which is also under the Weingart. And our radio show, the Veterans Advocacy Connection, which is about advocating for connecting veterans to the resources that they need. And the program, your program at the Weingart is one of the best programs I've seen around for veterans.
Thank you.
And I've talked to other veterans who, you know, have been in this program and that program, and they were not pleased with it. They were very unhappy. But from talking with some of the guys that are on the fifth floor at the Weingart Center Veterans Program, I've gotten to where they, you know, they're comfortable. You know, those who are working, going to school, it's like, wow, this is a place to lay their head. This is a place that they're getting three meals. This is a place where they can save some money, get themselves back together.
Absolutely.
They have their own room. And it's just a more relaxed atmosphere. And they feel, one of the things I heard the other day was, I feel like I'm treated like an adult here, not like a child, whereas I have to, I can't do this, I can't bring a food in, I can't do that. I, you know, a lot of the other places, and they, when it came to the Weingart, they said, wow, this place makes you feel like an adult, you know, that because they make you take responsibility for yourself and what you're doing. And so talk a little bit about the veterans program.
Well, our veterans program is run by a gentleman who is, he has a heart for it. First of all, he himself is a Vietnam vet. So he understands, and all of the individuals pretty much that work with the vets that are in our program are ex-military. So they have an understanding of what these gentlemen and women have been through. And so they know how to talk to them, which I think is a real big part of that, is knowing how to talk to someone, knowing what they may have experienced, because the possibility is that Fred himself may have experienced it, and or Braxton, or one of the other case managers who is their past or their veterans. So they work really closely with it, and again, you're a part of that, so you know how the door is open always. Mm-hmm. You can walk in and you can talk to any of these gentlemen. They make themselves available. Our programs, again, wrap around what the veteran needs. It's not about us saying what you have to do. Some of our clients have to go to the VA for certain services. We provide them with the tokens to catch the bus there. We make sure they get to their appointments. We don't want there to be any gap in what would stop them or cause them not to get the services they need. Mm-hmm. We make sure that, again, they go through our workforce program because we want to help them learn how to transfer the skills that maybe they've had for years working in the armed forces to how they can use those skills in everyday life. So we do a lot of work with them to find out what they did when they were in the service and how those skills are applicable in today's corporate America market. So that's a huge part of it. And of course, again, the services we talked about are for substance abuse and, you know, the behavioral health. So anything that they possibly need, we make sure they get it. Housing, all of that, you know, again, they're also able to stay at the Weingart up to as long as 2 years, depending on what their needs are. But we're always there to meet whatever those needs are. If they only need to be there for 9 months, we want to make sure that during that 9 months, we give them the tools and equip them to be able to take that next step going mm-hmm. forward.
Well, you know, I know you're not a veteran, and I won't hold that against you. but I know you have a heart from veterans. I think when I first met you, you shared with me a story that I've told to some other people about how it affected you. And how your heart became one that endeavors to be there for veterans, to help veterans. And, you know, you just took on a different perspective because of a trip. Tell us about that.
Wow. You know, I have to try to tell this story without crying or getting emotional. But I took a trip to Israel maybe 4, 5, 6 years ago, somewhere around that time. And you know, everybody watches the department advisories to make sure when you're traveling anywhere outside of the country that nothing is going on. And there hadn't been any incidences in Israel at that time. But to my great luck, I was there and we were going down the street with a tour guide. And all of a sudden the sirens go off and like clockwork, everybody just, whatever they were doing, they dropped everything and just ran. And me, not knowing what's going on, I'm standing there and they're like, you got to come. And I'm thinking, where are we going? What's going on? And just as we were heading down these stairs, I just heard this big boom and the whole building shook. And I was like, what was that? And they were like, that's a bomb. And I said, you've got to be kidding me. And we all just kind of, downstairs in this little area, we stayed there until we got a signal that everything was okay to come out. And as we were coming out, I said to the tour guide, I said, you know, I thought this was safe. And she goes, well, it is sort of safe, but we still have the threat of the Palestinians, you know, wanting to bomb us. And so we're always on guard. We're the most hated country over here. And people have to understand, Israel is really small, and it's surrounded by all of its enemies. Mm-hmm. I don't know any other place on this earth that is surrounded by all of its enemies. And those people have learned how to live with it. And as we came upstairs and out, what I saw were cars left running on the street with the doors wide open. From once they heard the siren, they just took off because that's the way of life for them. And so we were continuing on down the street, and the sirens went off again. And this time, there were children playing in the middle of the street. The age range was probably anywhere from 5 to 11. Mm-hmm. They were kicking a ball, and the sirens went off, and they took off. And, of course, this time, I took off with them.
I know you did.
I realized this is, you know, you don't know where the bomb is coming from. That's what the siren is designed to do, is which they don't know. Most times they just they detect that a missile has been launched, and the siren is the pre-warning to
get
the
moving.
Bomb. And
wow.
We took off running, and this time when I was having the conversation, of course, we heard the boom again. And so when we came back up, the tour guide went on to explain to me that and talked about, if it wasn't for America, they wouldn't be able to protect themselves this way, that they have this invisible bubble that when it senses a missile has been launched, it kind of goes up and is a covering, and it deflects the bomb. So what we were hearing was the bomb, when they can get it up in time and close it, it stops. It actually detonates the bomb before it hits the city.
Okay. Yeah.
So that's why people run, because you never know if it's gotten to where it needs to be in time for everybody to be safe. And so I couldn't wait to get out of there. I was happy to be there, but I couldn't wait to get out of there. And I remember saying to the pilot, are we going to be safe? Because we don't get to fly all the way back to the U.S. under a bubble.
Mm-hmm.
And he goes, oh, we'll be fine. And I said, how are you going to make that promise to me? And he goes, you'll be fine. Oh, needless to say, I prayed all the way.
Uh-huh.
And he and when he said, we're okay, because they give they're like this okay signal, because I'm thinking you could shoot the plane down.
Right.
And when he said, we're all clear, I came up and I just started praising the Lord, first of all.
All right.
When I got my feet back on U.S. soil, I kissed the ground. And I already had grown up around Army bases. I lived in Colorado, Denver, so I lived by Fitzsimmons and Laurie Air Force Base. So I've always had friends and family members who were a part of the armed forces. But it gave me a different perspective.
Yeah.
And I started to realize, look, I can walk down the street here.
Mm-hmm.
I can drive down the street. I don't have to worry about somebody wearing a jacket who wants to detonate a bomb and just kill a lot of people because they believe they're doing it for a specific right purpose.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have to do any of that. And then I started to put the extra pieces on there, and I said, my people, Americans, my people, I don't care what color you are. I don't care what, none of that makes a difference. Put their lives on the line, sacrificed to go to keep this country safe so that when I come home, I don't have to worry. Yeah. I don't have the same worries that the people in Israel have, or Iraq or Iran or Afghanistan. Right. I don't have those worries. And so I have a heart for those who literally have given 90% of their life. And when I say 90%, because they're back here. And it's, to me, it's almost like all we've given them back is 10% of that, because they're on the streets. And I can't understand how we're allowing that to happen. It just, I don't get it. If it wasn't for you and the many other veterans, we couldn't sit here and have this conversation. I lived in China for a minute. We couldn't do this.
Mm-hmm.
There's no radio station for the people to voice their opinions. Are you kidding?
Mm-hmm.
And so people died. People sacrificed. They gave up everything so that somebody like me could have a career, talk on the radio, have a job, mm-hmm. go to sleep at night, and do everything I want to do without fear.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's why I don't care where I am. When I see a veteran, I don't just say thank you. I know it's the best I can give in the moment,
mm-hmm.
but I try to express to them beyond just thank you for your service. I know that's nice and everything right. and acknowledging, but I try to go the extra mile and tell them, I understand.
Mm-hmm.
I understand. Because I couldn't last with two little bombs detonating up in the air. So I can't imagine what somebody's life mm-hmm. was like, running from enemies, bullets and everything flying around them, how they could do this.
Mm-hmm.
So that experience changed me.
Yeah, and you know, when you shared it with me and I heard you talking about it, I was like, wow, if more Americans could really begin to understand. I mean, there's been a new understanding coming over the past several years, but if more Americans really understood how important, you know, our men
Absolutely.
And women are who are in uniform, who go over, whether they stay stateside or whether they go overseas, wherever they are, that they are part of our protection that God has given us,
exactly.
you know, to have them ready and ready to go. They have to get trained. You know, these young boys and young women that come that may not know anything, and they get in and they train them, they get them straight, they get them, they show them what to do and how to do it, and they go out there willingly to provide the service that we need, right. that everybody else's need. Melvin is a veteran also.
Well, thank you.
You know, he's a veteran mm-hmm. also. And so, you know, you have the front line, you have those in the support role, you have those in the air, the sea, the water, wherever they are, they've been there for us. And it's so important to me. I'm, you know, lately I've just been so touched by the help that we've been able to provide to a lot of the Vietnam veteran, because they were the ones that were kicked to the curb.
Oh, yeah.
And they fought a war that they didn't fully understand, but they volunteered. They went over there and they did it. And when they came back, the country said, "We don't know you," and turned their backs to them. And so seeing them now get the help, you know, because many of the veterans I deal with now that are coming to me, like the five I told you this week alone, several of them are Vietnam era veterans that were homeless, and now they have a place to stay. When I see the difference in, you know, I went to see about my vets, and so I went over there and I was talking to one of the case managers. I said, "Well, okay, what's wrong with the room? Why you haven't gotten the room together for my vet? What's holding it up?" It's like, "Well, it's not your vet." I said, "Yeah, he's my vet because I brought him in here, you know, so I want to know, make sure he's taken care of," because I'm very adamant about that. If I send a vet over there, I want to make sure he's taken care of, not waiting 5 hours or 6 hours or 10 hours and nobody comes to see him, nobody comes down to pick him up. It's like, what's going on? And so they know me over there for speaking up for my veterans. You know, they're my veterans. Right. They're like my babies. Right. I have to take care of them. I got to make sure that they have a place to stay. They're comfortable in the room. And once they get some rest, because I had to tell them, just rest, because they were all sleep deprived, all five of them. And they all came from different places, you know, and were, but they were all homeless and needed something better. And I said, "Well," and I had one guy who had called the veterans hotline, and they had given him a place in Hollywood somewhere. And so I said, "Okay," all he had was an address. And I said, "Well, okay, let me call and find out what they have, because I'm telling you about the Weingart. Let me call and see what this one." So he went on to lunch. I said, "Go to lunch so you don't miss your lunch. Come on back and I'll tell you." So when he came back, I compared. I said, "Well, they put four in a room. You get one in a room over here. You may get two when you first get here, but they eventually gonna put you one in, have your own room." I said, "Well, you can have this. You can't have this. You can't have this. You can do this." And they got this, did this. I said, "But over here, you got this, this, and this." And so as he looked at it and I presented the choices for him, I said, "Now, which one you want to go to?" He said, "Well, that was," he said, "I thought I wanted to go over there, but this one works out best for me. I like, you know," he said, "That sounds real good. Can you get me in there?" I said, "Let me call." So I got him set up and he was able to get in. So, you know, I check on him. I said, "Get some rest," because I had one that came, and the last time I saw him was that Thursday, and it didn't work out that Friday. He was out. He couldn't get back in time before they left. So he said he'd come back Monday. He said, "I'll be okay," because he was sleeping on the streets. So when he came back Monday, he looked worse than before because he hadn't slept, you know?
Yeah.
And so now when I see him and some of the other veterans, I can see they've rested. Yeah. They've cleaned up. The first thing they wanted to do was to shower, wash clothes, get themselves some sleep. And so they've all had a chance to do that now. And so I can see them now. They're already looking better. Just, I mean, what a difference a day makes, okay? What a difference a night of rest makes in their lives when I see that. So I'm passionate in the sense because these are men who have served our country. I'm not talking about 1 or 2 years. I'm talking about 8 years, 10 years for each one of them. They served some years in the Navy, in the Marines, in the Air Force. And so it's like, wow, okay. But they fell on hard times. And in each case, it was mainly about losing a job.
Absolutely,
they lost a job and they tried to pick themselves back up without needing help because, you know how men are. If they're men, they want to, "Hey, I can do this. Oh, I can handle this. You know, I'm cool.
Everything is fine."
Yeah, trying to work through it. But things don't happen. And so as a result, they find themselves, they have to ask for help. They need the help. And, you know, I'm glad we're there to be able to, because they all found me in the library. They just happened to come in the library to use the computers. They saw the Veterans Resource Center sign. Because when you come down the escalator, you can see,
you see it.
And they came over there. They started talking to me and asking me questions. And I started working on their behalf and getting them in. And so, you know, it's not that we're going outside. It's not that somebody's referring them. Just being in the library, because that's the first place. It's a community center now, the library is.
It's a stopping place now.
Yeah, it's a place where people go to rest, to meet other people, to use the computers. And, you know, they see me and they're like, "Oh, you know, hi, what do you do?" You know, they're not sure, because even though they see the sign, it's like, "Well, I'm a veteran. I've been there, done that. What you need?" Okay. And then I can, you know, find out and talk to them and see what it is exactly that I can help you with. Oh, housing. In every case, housing. Housing. I'm sleeping on the streets. I'm sleeping in a shelter that I can't do anything else but get up early in the morning. I can't go back until 4 or 5 o'clock in the evening. I have to leave at a certain time. I have to come back. I can't do this. They took my chewing gum the other day. I was like, wow. You know, one of the vets told me they took this pack of chewing gum. And I said, what? He said, yes, they took my chewing gum. He said, I got to get out of there. I said, okay, I'm working on it. So I'm on the phone calling Braxton, and it's like, what's up? You know, okay, I got my guy here. You know, has the liaison call. What's going on? And so once they're all in, you know, it just feels good.
Well, you get the rest too.
Yeah, you know? Yeah, but I'm ready for the next one. Where the rest of them? All right, bring me 5 more.
Exactly.
You know, so we can get them taken care of. But I'm glad that you learn from that experience, and that it was a blessing to you to see, to open your eyes.
Absolutely. I honestly believe that was really my purpose for being there. I mean, I stopped caring about the business. Mm-hmm. You know, I know I was worried about getting out of there, but at the same time, it just struck me that these people had to, it became such a way of life for them that it was second nature. Mm-hmm. And so for somebody like me that it wasn't second nature for, I was completely out of place. Mm-hmm. And everybody who was around me knew it. Mm-hmm. You know, they were like, yeah, it's obvious she doesn't know anything. She hasn't been here.
Right.
She hasn't gone through this. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, there were even several people there who were like, gosh, I wish I could go to the United States. And, you know, I wish we were a big enough country that we could handle a lot more people. But we have to start to be careful ourselves. I mean, we experienced something on 9/11 that changed the course of how we see things here in America now. And so it's not as free as we would like it to be. I know we say the land of the free and the brave, and we want to believe that, and we want people to have that. But we have to be cautious ourselves here now. Mm-hmm. And in terms of veterans, the one thing, especially the Vietnam vet, one of the things that I learned is these men and women went to a country, they couldn't trust the people there to help them. Mm-hmm. And then they came back here to a place that they thought was going to be where they could have the trust and the comfort. And they came back here and found that they couldn't trust anybody either. Mm-hmm. That created the anger. Then they find themselves living on the street. You can't trust anybody living on the street. So how do you ever get comfortable?
Right.
You can't get comfortable in your own country. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, you become uncomfortable in your own skin because that's not the life you want to live. You don't want to be on the street.
Right.
That's why for the 5 that you've helped, you've seen a difference because they've been able to relax.
Yes.
And regain some of the comfort.
Right.
Not sleeping on a hard ground, not worrying about whether somebody's going to come up and do something to them.
Right.
You know, washing clothes, things that we take for granted, right. Mm-hmm. The basics, right. You're giving them back that. And that's one of the great things that I love about being at the Weingart Center. Dignity is number one.
You must read my mind. Dignity is returned.
Absolutely. And that's, we want to quickly restore dignity. We do that from the moment they come in. We talk to them about their situation. And that's a key part of what happens when they come through our programs is everybody falls on hard times. Mm-hmm. Some of us just have other resources that help us. Mm-hmm. But if you're alone, and in some cases you're headstrong, I'm pretty headstrong, and, you know, they're, but by the grace of God, go I. If something were to happen to me, it's not as if I wouldn't find myself in the same shoes that they're in. Mm-hmm. So I'm very sensitive to that. And I make sure that anybody I walk by on the street here, recognize, I let them know that I see them. I don't just walk by them. They're not invisible to me. I speak to them. I smile because even the basic of things, mm-hmm. not having anybody who will talk to them, who will look at them,
right.
who will, you know, just acknowledge them. Mm-hmm. I notice that if I just say hello, some of them give me a look of surprise, like,
right.
really? Hi.
Yeah.
And I've talked to several people who are living on the streets, and I've run into a couple of vets, and boy, do I push the Weingart Center on them.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, you know, you're also part of a documentary that's been, tell us about that documentary. You got about a few more
minutes. We were selected. I met a couple of gentlemen who were documentarians who were working with DirecTV to do a documentary that's coming out this summer. And I went through a long, myself and Braxton, mm-hmm. and a gentleman in the Grow program by the name of Marcus Armand, we sat down with them, and we told them what we do. And because we are the largest comprehensive human services organization on the West Coast, And the fact that our programs are designed to wrap around the needs of the individual, not the needs of a type of individual, mm-hmm. they saw that as a unique part of what needs to be explained. And so we were selected, and currently we're filming this documentary with them, and they've selected yourself along with one other vet. Yeah. You know I was going to get Teresa in there somewhere. But they've selected.
I thought they forgot about me. I haven't heard from them.
No, you know, the whole purpose of this documentary was really to be about a post 9/11 veteran who may have seen combat. And the purpose of that was not to leave the Vietnam vets out of it. But a lot of the post 9/11 are young men and women who went straight into armed services out of high school. So they've never had the ability to be independent, to know what it means to look for a job, how to find the job.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so they are coming back now from Iraq and Afghanistan, mm-hmm. and they're landing on the street because they don't know how to do the basics. So the purpose of this documentary really was to show how organizations are helping these young post 9/11 veterans mm-hmm. Reintegrate themselves not only into society, but learn to take responsibility on a non-combat level.
Now, when is this expected to be?
This is coming. This documentary will air starting in June. And the way DirecTV is doing it is they're allowing all of their viewers across the United States to see this documentary, and they'll be able to queue it up anytime they want, which is what I love. It's not something that's going to air one time and they're not going to see it. They'll be able to go on their cable listing, see the show, mm-hmm. and they will be able to watch it at will, whenever they want, however long they want. If they want to have a dinner over it and talk about it, or they mm-hmm. want to show it to the kids at school or wherever, they'll be able to show that. And I think that's commendable yeah. of DirecTV to take that step.
Right. That makes it available to everybody on their time.
Exactly.
And the last thing was, don't make a donation, make an investment. That's the mm-hmm. Weingart motto for provision. And I like that because it is making an investment in a veteran,
absolutely.
In a person, in another human being,
absolutely.
Make an investment. And I've heard stories in the past of people who made an investment in someone, and down the road, that person became a part of their life.
So, absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and so, you know, mm-hmm. I want to thank you, Felicia.
I think
Melvin is cueing me saying, all right, shut up talking. So, contact number. Okay, for Felicia, you want a contact number for her?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
For both of them.
Well, you know, at the LA Central Library for the Veterans Resource Corps, I'm on a lower level 3, and that's 3 levels down in the lobby area across from the computers. And my number there is 213-598-4046. I'm generally there Monday through Friday, and I have a coworker, and we might be there from, say, 10 o'clock or 11 o'clock in the morning until maybe 6, 7 sometimes. What's your contact?
Well, for me, you can reach me at 213-689-2183. That's 213-689-2183.
Okay, thank you very much. Hopefully, when you get your show rolling, because I was talking to Blair and Raquel, and they was talking about one of the major problems they have down there is the tent dwellers. And mm-hmm. I would really like to get a discussion on that, how we can impact the individuals that live in the tents and help transition them out. Yeah, but a great discussion. Okay. I would like to extend a special thanks to Teresa Thomas, Felicia DePue, and my co-host, Earlene Anthony. Please listen to past shows of the Qumran Report by Googling in Qumran Report. This show will be on YouTube tomorrow morning, so you can pull it up. Yeah. Thank you for tuning in to the Qumran Report, and from your host, Melvin Ishmael Johnson. May the peace and blessings of the life-giving creative spirit be upon you and upon your family. I leave you with the song that opened the show, Homeboy by Sunchi Ali.
All right.
Homeboy.
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 Brothers, there's only one blood, cause it ain't no sense in us trampling on the stones. It's us down, down to the bone. Blood is thick, waters were known well, cousins were kept apart, mothers were often memories. Fathers were not favored on the farm, for he could do some harm, he could wreck the master scheme, for he, brothers, could dream. Your mama ain't no saint, your daddy died in a shallow stream, but your uncle Dr. King did have a dream, my brother. And what is your real excuse? Why can't you study your lessons and stay in school? Why can't you study your lessons and stay in school? Free love and sex ain't nothing but a game. Don't never last, try hope. Take a chance on love, register to vote.